Welcome into the Diamond Vols podcast. I am Ben McKee, joined by Ryan Shumpert. Ryan, how are you on this Thursday evening?
I'm doing well. Appreciate you having me on. Excited to talk about in a big-time series at Lindsey Nelson Stadium this weekend.
That's right. Number 4 Tennessee versus number 11 Florida. If you are going by the USA Today coaches poll, obviously there are approximately 7,898 college baseball polls. But three of them have Tennessee ranked number 4. Two of them have Tennessee ranked at number 6. I think one poll has them number 7, just kind of all over the map. And Ryan, I never thought we'd be walking into a baseball series between Tennessee and Florida where Tennessee would be the higher ranked team. And not only be the higher ranked team, but be the 4th ranked team in the country.
Yeah, no, I'm the exact same way. I said that when I was talking to Brent earlier today, and it was funny. I had that same thought. I think we talked about it at the LSU series, but that was one thing because LSU is a little down this year. They were what, 20 at the time, but Florida preseason number 1 team in the country, expectations sky high, a team that's going to contend for the national championship. So for Tennessee to be ranked higher than them, let alone be ranked, you know, pretty handful of spots higher than him, is pretty crazy and just shows how far this program's come in 3 years.
It absolutely has. And we'll talk about Tennessee being ranked 4th here in a little while. And we'll also hear from Nick De La Tour of Gators Territory Rivals Florida site. I had him on to kind of break down the Florida baseball team and get the Florida perspective of this weekend, what Florida needs to do well, kind of where they've struggled. You mentioned them being preseason number 1. They haven't necessarily played up to being preseason number 1 to this point. So I asked Nick why that has not been the case. So we'll hear from Nick shortly as well. But I want to go back and touch on the Alabama series because Tennessee is by far a better baseball team than Alabama. And it's a road series in the SEC, and I do think Alabama is better than its record says it is, but I still don't think Tennessee played great baseball. And at the end of the day, it's okay because you came out with a road series win in the SEC, something that Tennessee has not done a lot around here in quite a while. I believe, if I remember correctly, it's the first time Tennessee has won its first two SEC road series since 2005, and the first time they've won their first three series of SEC play since 2001. So that just kind of speaks to the achievement. And at the end of the day, that overtakes, you know, playing some bad baseball as long as you get the result that you want. But they did not pass the eye test. And the fact that we're talking about the eye test and them not playing well despite picking up a win, it kind of also speaks to how far this program has come, just as much as them being ranked 4th in the country, because 3, 4, 5 years ago, it would have been just hallelujah. Tennessee baseball won a series. But Ryan, just kind of when you look back at last weekend, Tennessee loses 4-7 on Friday night. Sean Hundley, Chad Dallas were not crisp, probably their worst outings of the season. But then you bounce back on Saturday with an 8-4 win in 11 innings, and then you win the series finale on Sunday, 9-8. Just kind of your overall thoughts on Tennessee-Alabama last weekend.
Yeah, I think my biggest thought was what you were just hitting on, that this is crazy that Tennessee could play bad in a series and win on the road compared to where they were a few years ago. And more than that, it was the fact that Tennessee blew leads, they played unfundamental baseball, things were going wrong for them. And where in the past, when things went wrong for Tennessee, people were hanging their heads, they didn't believe they could win. And with this team, there's just such a self-belief, such a thought that we can get it done in any situation. And that's what they showed. They bounced back from their first Friday night loss of the year and won two really tight games on Saturday and Sunday. And then past that, I look at it, I don't want to rail on the negatives as much, but Tennessee was probably a little lucky with some of the injuries that Alabama has in its pitching rotation with Prelim and Gene, because Alabama has good starting pitching, but with those guys out, they weren't able to really have good bullpen pitching. And Tennessee took advantage of that once they got past Alabama's main arms on Friday night and Saturday early in that game when it got into extra innings. And then Sunday they were able to put the consistent pressure on Alabama.
Yes, and part of not passing the eye test, and you touched on a couple of these things, and I mentioned Sean Hundley and Chad Dallas. I thought the not passing the eye test was a result of pitchers who have pitched well either this season or throughout their career did not look good. You know, at the plate, leaving runners on base continues to be an issue, and you can get away with it against teams like Alabama. But this weekend against Florida, next weekend against Vanderbilt, who, by the way, is in the top of the sixth against Georgia as we record this, and Kumar Rocker just got pulled from the game in the sixth inning. I think he threw around 100 pitches. I think the last pitch he threw was his 100th pitch, and it was a two-run home run, if I saw correctly. So, two home runs from Georgia in the sixth, and Georgia's up on Vandy 6-1 in game one of that series. And we were joking in our baseball group chat that of course the off game from Kumar Rocker comes the week before before he comes to Knoxville to play Tennessee. But you can't get away with leaving runners on base against teams like Florida, teams like Vanderbilt, because you have guys like Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter on the other side, and you're going to need all the runs that you can get in those games. And it's been a consistent theme for this baseball team to leave runners on base. They've offset it by the amount of walks and kind of their on-base percentage. But that is something that is going to have to be corrected. And I do wonder your thoughts on Alabama as a team, because I watched that game, and I made this comment earlier. They're better than their record indicates. I think their poor record, and they've lost some bad midweek games, but they've competed in SEC play against Ole Miss, against Arkansas, against Tennessee. They remind me of the year one, year two Tony Vitello's, and they have some good starters, and they keep them in games, but they just don't have enough talent and depth to win those series just yet.
Yeah, I completely agree. They remind me a lot of Tennessee in 2019, where they have, like you said, they have a couple really nice pieces on the mound. They have a pretty solid lineup, but they just don't have the depth to consistently compete. And they saw just a brutal start to SEC play. I mean, talk about the first three series being tough with Arkansas, Ole Miss, Tennessee, three teams that are all ranked in the top 10 right now and have been ranked in the top five this season. So, and then they're doing that with two of their best arms injured right now. So when they get those guys back, their schedule gets a little bit easier. They're going to start racking up some wins in SEC play, and that's going to look like a better series win than it was. But I think you hit the nail on the head with the leaving runners on base. Tennessee was able to load the base 9 times in that Saturday and Sunday games at Alabama. And they were getting runs most of the time, but they missed chances to blow the game open. They weren't getting the big hit, scored 2 or 3 runs. It was sack fly brings a run in, RBI walk brings a run in. And when they're playing Florida, when they're playing, and especially when they're playing Vanderbilt, when they get in those opportunities, they have to take advantage and deliver. I don't know if I'd call it a knockout blow, because it's not going to be a knockout blow for the game, but they got to deliver a big punch and really take advantage of those situations.
Yes, they do. I've never seen a team be simultaneously so good at loading the bases and so bad at hitting with the bases loaded. I've never seen a team so simultaneously good slash bad at an aspect of baseball as Tennessee is in that regard. But at the end of the day, you got the series win, and that's what matters most. And now you turn your attention to what will probably be the toughest 2-week stretch of baseball on the schedule. And there's other tough 2-week stretches on the schedule. That's going to be the case in SEC play. But to me, this is like truly because they're in division opponents. They're rivals. Florida and Tennessee do not like each other. Vanderbilt and Tennessee do not like each other. And this is, you know, 2-weekend series where Tennessee can kind of build some ground or lose some ground on potentially finishing higher than third in the SEC East, which is where they were predicted to finish in preseason. So if Tennessee wants to finish first or even come in second, they're going to have to do some damage these next 2 weeks. And we'll talk about kind of maybe what that damage looks like from a win-loss standpoint here in just a moment. But to put a bow on Tennessee being ranked number 4 in the country, I want to kind of know your thoughts on the validity of being ranked number 4 in the country. Because I think it speaks to more of how far the program has come rather than them actually being the 4th best team in the country. Because I can tell you right now, they're not the 4th best team in the country. Tony Vitello said as much Tuesday following their 10-1 win over Eastern Kentucky. He was asked about the ranking, and he flat out said, we're not that good. So I think it speaks more to what Tennessee has achieved to this point and how much Tony Vitello and the coaching staff has built up this baseball program, because Tennessee is, what, 25-4, 25-5 right now, 7-2 in SEC play. People see that record and realize what Tony Vitello is doing, but kind of when you watch the games and you peel back the layers, like you and I were just talking about with the Alabama series, you see that that there are some flaws that could potentially bite Tennessee if they don't get them corrected. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on the validity of Tennessee being ranked number four in the country.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think this is the fourth best team in the country. I'd say, you know, if I had to put a number on it, somewhere in that 8-12 range is where I feel like Tennessee is. But that's just the nature of polls. You know, when Tennessee was able to take advantage of its kind of softer start to SEC play, win the series it's supposed to win, pick up a sweep in this series, and that's just what comes with it. You're going to climb the polls when you do that, especially in a sport like baseball when you're playing four games a week and teams are consistently dropping games. So I don't think Tennessee is actually that good. But Tennessee, like you said, it shows how far this program's come, that Tennessee is – well, I don't think they're the fourth best team in the country. I do think they're a legitimate top 10 team in the country, a team that has a chance to – a great chance to make a super regional. And then, you know, once you get to the super regional, you're in a puncher's fight to make it to the College World Series.
Yeah, and of course the year in which it looks like Tennessee is in the driver's seat to host the regional is the year that the NCAA is going to determine – who actually gets to host, or not necessarily who is going to host, but where the host sites will be. Those will be predetermined. And I'm going to ask you about that in just a second, because you wrote a great story for VolQuest kind of diving into that. But to put a bow in our conversation about being ranked fourth in the country, I don't bring that up to necessarily disrespect this Tennessee baseball team or to bring them down, because they are very deserving of the ranking. Again, it speaks to how far the program has come, and it still speaks to what they've done this season. 25-5, 7-2 in SEC play, very impressive. Because you look outside of SEC play in Indiana State, Georgia State, Georgia Southern, there are teams on that schedule that they beat that have done some damage this season. So Tennessee is having a great season. I just think that, you know, they're going to come back down to earth at some point, but earth isn't, you know, too far off from heaven, I guess, to kind of make the comparisons in this particular conversation, because I agree with what you said. I think they're in that 10 to 15 range, and that is a great range to be in, and Tennessee has a legitimate shot, assuming that they can continue to stay healthy and continue to improve and some bats wake up. That they were going to rely on when they kind of put the team together in their mind during the preseason. They're going to compete for a national championship. I'm not afraid to say that. I think that this team is capable of winning a national championship. The odds may not be great, but they have a chance to get to Omaha. And once you get to Omaha, you know, who knows what may happen. So I don't bring up the validity of being ranked fourth in the country to necessarily bring this team down. They're very deserving. I guess I'm more so bringing it up just to caution Tennessee fans that, you know, don't set your expectations too high. And then the moment the baseball team begins to maybe lose some games to teams that are more talented than them, don't just go ripping at Tony Vitello and trying to push him out of town. I mean, you watched Tennessee lose to Alabama in game one on Friday night. And of course, Vol Twitter was just distraught after losing one baseball game. So I guess that's more so why I am bringing it up. But Ryan, I want to get your thoughts on kind of the rule the NCAA passed earlier this week, or the guidelines that it set in place for hosting a regional tournament. Just kind of what was the rule that they put in place or the guidelines they implemented, and how is that going to shake out?
Yeah, so it's the rule is they're going to decide the 8 super regional hosts and 16 regional hosts, as you said, on May 10th, which comes 3 weeks before Bracket Monday or whatever they call it, Selection Monday, I guess, on Memorial Day. which is going to be really interesting because that's a long time ahead. There's a lot of baseball to be played after that. And what they're looking for is having the amount of hotel rooms that require teams to have the extra space that they need this year due to COVID, having the proper locker rooms, having places for them to warm up, which I think all that, you know, Tennessee fits well. Knoxville obviously has a plethora of hotel rooms. You got the football facility right by the baseball field, so there's locker rooms in there to use. There's places for teams to warm up. So all of that, I think they really meet. I think the question is going to be, and I think this will be a bigger question if Tennessee falls more to that borderline regional host, is where does Lindsey Nelson Stadium be in a small stadium that's not a nice facility? How much does that affect things? Because I'm sure the NCAA is not going to try to make that sound like it's a big deal. But when you're on the bubble, right on that edge, it's hard to think it's not a big deal, especially when you're in the SEC and there's so many good teams in the Southeast that are going to have a great chance to host. And they might try, or you would think the NCAA is going to try to mitigate travel more this year too, maybe get some more northern teams. I'm not sure how they're going to do things with the West, with California and Oregon still basically shut down. So it'll be interesting to follow, but I think it overall could almost be a good thing for Tennessee because you look at the way their schedule folds after that May 10th date. Home series against Arkansas, who's one of the three best teams in the country, and then an away series at South Carolina, who is a team that Tennessee's absolutely going to be competing for a regional host spot with. So a really challenging end of the season, and you look at the way Tennessee's schedule falls, obviously they have the gauntlet, like you said, next 2 weeks, two-week hardest stretch of the season. Then after that, those next 3 weeks are a little manageable. So if Tennessee is able to pick up series wins there, I think they'll be in a great spot to earn that regional host on May 10th.
Yes, and I wonder how much local COVID protocols will also weigh in the NCAA's decision on who will host and who will not. But we'll continue to monitor that situation. And as I said, Ryan did a great job of kind of outlining the situation at hand and what the NCAA is going to do on VolQuest. So I encourage you to go check that out. Moving to this weekend, Tennessee, Florida 20-9, Tennessee 25-5. Florida is 5-4 in SEC play. And Friday's game will start at 6:30. Chad Dallas will start for Tennessee. Florida right-hander Tommy Mace will start for the Gators on Saturday. Will Heflin will start, and it's to be determined, according to the game notes, as to who will start for Florida. And then on Sunday, Blade Tidwell, Tennessee's phenomenal true freshman, will start against Florida left-hander Hunter Barco. And Saturday's game is at 7. Sunday's game is at 1. So I guess before we kind of get into our keys to a Tennessee win this weekend, wanted to provide some injury updates. Tony Vitello met with the media on Thursday afternoon. I asked him about Jackson Greer as well as Will Mabry, a sophomore left-hander for Tennessee who's been battling some injuries this year. And I also asked him about redshirt junior Jason Rackers, who has been dealing with some arm issues after coming back from Tommy John. And he was also asked by Liam Spence about Liam Spence. And I guess that's the biggest name to kind of keep an eye on going into this weekend. Tennessee's starting shortstop, who is just terrorizing the SEC at the plate, leads the SEC in batting average and on-base percentage. And nobody's really even close to him in those statistical categories, if I can speak on a Thursday night. But he's been banged up. He's kind of been dealing with a back injury all year, but now he's also dealing with a hamstring injury, and that has limited him and had to DH game 2 and game 3 in Tuscaloosa against Alabama. So was still able to play in the field. Did not play on Tuesday in the midweek game as expected, and Tony Vitello said that he'll be a part of the weekend plans, but what those plans will look like is to be determined. I guess how he feels when he shows up to the ballpark. I would imagine, Ryan, that probably looks like he will DH, and then Logan Steenstra, who had a great weekend in Tuscaloosa, will continue to play at shortstop.
Yeah, I took that the same way. The way he was talking about it made me skeptical that Spence is going to be playing any shortstop this weekend, but the fact that he DH'd those last two games of the Alabama series make you feel comfortable that he's going to be in that role again. And, you know, obviously he's been great with his bat. Like you said, he's just been dominant, probably Tennessee's best hitter, or at least best ability to get on base. But he's such a good athlete. He's really good in the field. He's really good running the bases. So he's certainly going to be limited. And it kind of works out in some ways because Steenstra's earned the right to get at bats, and it makes it easy. When Spence is out, Steenstra, you're playing shortstop. But then you look at it, he's had some issues fielding, had three errors in that series against Alabama, had a play on Tuesday night that hard play, but play Liam Spence probably makes. So in a series that against a really good hitting team and with a Tennessee pitching staff that prides itself on throwing strikes and playing good defense behind, you wonder if he makes a couple mistakes, how does Tennessee handle that? How does Tennessee handle that shortstop spot? So it'll be interesting to see. It certainly makes, I think, decision-making, you know, drawing up the lineup easier for Tony Vitello. But then what happens if he makes a mistake or two in the field? That's when it gets a little complicated for Vitello.
Yeah, and I don't know what he would do if Steenstra just falls apart in the field. I mean, Jake Rucker has played shortstop, played it as a true freshman. You have Jarrell Ortega who could play shortstop as well. Ethan Payne, I believe he can play a little bit of shortstop. So that would make for an interesting decision. I would imagine, if I had to guess, they would slide Jake Rucker over to shortstop and probably put Trey Lipscomb at third base. That's what I would guess would happen. I think the more interesting caveat to that situation is if and when Liam Spence becomes healthy and Max Ferguson continues to struggle the way that he is struggling, and Steenstra, he's going to have to do it for more than one weekend, obviously, but if he continues to hit the ball well, do you slide Steenstra over to second and take Ferg out of the lineup? So that is something interesting to keep an eye on, too. So you talk about easy on Tony Vitello writing the lineup card. That also makes it easy in that regard, that you don't have to make a decision with Steenstra and Ferguson with the way that those two have been hitting. Again, small sample size for Steenstra, but kind of hard to keep him out of the lineup at this point. The other three names that I mentioned, Jackson Greer, Tony Vitello said that he would be good to go for this weekend. He's been banged up the last two or three weeks and has not been available at all. And he's working back and is available for this weekend, which is big time for Tennessee to have its true backup catcher back in the fold. And he's a great pinch hitting candidate to have come off the bench in the seventh, eighth, ninth inning. Also a candidate to DH if Pete Durkee continues to struggle a little bit. You can throw Jackson Greer in there as well. So that's big news for Tennessee. And then I mentioned Jason Rackers and Will Mabry. Both had not pitched in quite some time, threw on Tuesday night. And Tony said that the returns health-wise in terms of how they felt after pitching were good, and they'll be available if he wants to roll with Rackers and Mabry this weekend, which also great news for a Tennessee team that probably needs to expand its bullpen. Hasn't really had to rely on the bullpen a ton this past weekend against Alabama. It was tested a fair bit. Redmond Walsh continues to struggle to find the strike zone, which is weird to say because he has a 2.04 ERA and he's one of the best closers in Tennessee history, but he's not the crisp, efficient, straight into the point Redmond Walsh that we have seen the last two seasons. And then Sean Hundley got touched up a little bit. So Kirby Connell, Camden Sewell had to throw some big innings. Mark McLaughlin had to throw some big innings. So they had to extend into the bullpen a little bit more than they have had to. But as you get into teams like Vanderbilt, Florida, Arkansas, you really need to kind of have more than just three or four guys you can go to in the bullpen. So that's big news for Tennessee that Rackers and Mabry will be available. Looking at this weekend, Ryan, just real simple question. If Tennessee wins, it will be because, and vice versa, if Tennessee loses, it will be because.
Well, I think one's what we were talking about earlier. If Tennessee loses, it's because they don't take advantage when they have runners on base, runners in scoring position. And then I think the other big key, Tennessee wins. I think Tennessee wins if they get a big-time performance from Chad Dallas on Friday night. He's been very solid for them. He probably had his worst start of the season at Alabama last week. And that's, I say, his worst start. He was cruising along for a few innings, and then he he really struggled there. I think it was the fourth inning when he got run out of the game. And that's kind of been the MO on him when he struggled. He's looked good for four or five innings, and then he runs into a little trouble and struggles to get out of it. So if he's able to be the guy that he was in that LSU series 2 weeks ago at home, give Tennessee seven innings, one, two runs, and really out-duel Tommy Mace, because I think that's just going to be a really good pitching matchup, a really good, exciting one to watch at the ballpark Friday night. I think that will be so big for Tennessee, because I think when you turn to the rest of the weekend and you look at Saturday and you look at Sunday, I think Tennessee has an advantage at the starting pitching over Florida. So I think that Friday night game is such a big matchup, as it always is in the SEC. And if you get a good long inning performance from Chad Dallas, I think Tennessee is going to be in a great spot to get the Friday night game and then a great spot to pick up a huge series win over the Gators.
How concerned are you with the pitching bouncing back this weekend? Because Chad Dallas, Blake Tidwell, Sean Hundley, Tennessee's three best pitchers this year, I thought had their poorest outings of the season in Tuscaloosa. Are you at all concerned about them heading into this weekend?
Not really. I'm really not overly concerned about any of those guys. I'll tell you what, Blake Tidwell, you're right, he had his worst outing, but I was just so impressed with what he did on Sunday, because for a true freshman to go on the road and get hit around like he did in the first few innings, and he really never got into a complete groove. He was still giving up stuff, but he got Tennessee deep in that game. He outlasted Alabama starter by probably, I don't even remember, two or three innings, and got Tennessee where they could just go straight Cannell and Hundley to the finish line. And then the fact that Hundley came back and he pitched really well on Sunday makes me feel good about him. And he's just been such a rock for Tennessee. Consistency, any position you put him in, he's been really effective for multiple years. And then Chad Dallas, he just seems like that guy that's going to bounce back from a bad start. He just has that mindset. He's such a competitor. And Vitello talked about it when he went there to pull him last week. He was respectful, but he was getting pretty mad at him. So I think he's going to have a chip on his shoulder, which he really always does. And then you come out with the fact that it's a big Friday night series against a huge rival and a really good SEC ace in with Florida, with Mace. So I think I feel confident with all those guys, especially with Tidwell and Hundley.
I'm not concerned either, just because it's a small sample size. If this were 2 to 3 weeks in a row, then okay, let's have that conversation. But I think Chad Dallas will bounce back, because that's the type of guy he is. Blake Tidwell, his stuff is just too good. And Alabama was a good fastball hitting team. So I'm not concerned, definitely not concerned about Sean Hundley. I think they'll be fine. But going back to the question I asked you before, that kind of the keys to victory, they're going to need them to pitch well, obviously. Florida, one of the most talented teams in the country, but they strike out a ton. And when they have struggled this year, it's been because they strike out at the plate. Their game against Florida A&M on Tuesday or Wednesday of this week was the first game all season in which they have not struck out at the plate. You'll hear Nick De La Torre here in just a moment mention that. So Florida strikes out a ton. Tennessee's pitchers are going to have to follow that formula if they want to win, because I do think it'll be a good pitcher's duel. Florida has good pitching depth, although their game one and game two starters maybe haven't lived up to preseason expectations, but they've still had a good year. It's just those preseason expectations were so ridiculous. And then at the plate, you just have to find a way to capitalize. You can't leave, 35 runners on base last weekend. You can't do that and expect to beat good baseball teams. You can get away with it against teams like Alabama. You're not going to get away with it against teams like Florida. And now on the flip side of that is, if you are going to get out, at least do so by putting pressure on Florida's defense. Because they have struggled in the field at times as well. So at least hit the ball hard, put it in play, and make that Florida defense work. And then who knows what may happen. Maybe the shortstop overthrows first base, and it's like the Georgia-Tennessee series from two years ago when Emerson Hancock was on the mound, and error at first was the difference in the game, because Tennessee put the ball in play and made the defense work. So those are kind of my keys to Tennessee coming out. Simple keys to Tennessee coming out with a win this weekend. We'll end on this. we've mentioned a couple times that this is the toughest 2-week stretch for Tennessee this season when you look on the schedule. What do you think is a fair expectation these next 2 weekends from a win-loss standpoint? And I'll put you on the spot. What do you think happens these next 2 weekends and this weekend?
Yeah, so I think a fair expectation for the next 2 weeks would probably be go 2-4. I think the goal should be to go 3-3, no doubt. And I'll predict 2-4 because of what I'll say in my prediction for the Florida series. I think Florida will take 2 out of 3. And I mean, I think these are 2 really evenly matched teams. It's going to be a really, really competitive series. I'm not some big genius that has it figured out that Florida's winning 2 out of 3. I just think Tennessee has been able to win so many close games and really find a way to fight. And they've been, like I said, 6-0 in extra inning games. I don't know to stat what they are in 1 or 2 run games. I'd imagine they'd be really good. It just feels like Tennessee is due to pick up some close losses. And Florida has the depth in their bullpen, the arms to consistently match Tennessee and make things hard on Tennessee's offense all weekend long. Well, that's why I think your point was so good about putting the ball in play. If Florida can help you out at all, give you anything easy, you have to take advantage of it, because this is a Florida pitching staff that's not going to do so. So when the fielding makes mistakes behind them, you really have to capitalize.
It definitely feels like Tennessee is due for a couple of close losses and a series loss. And I'm going to go with Tennessee winning this weekend because it's at home. I don't think either team will sweep. Both teams are too feisty, too much talent. They dislike each other. Neither team will allow that to happen. If either team gets swept, I would be surprised. But because Florida's pitching has been shaky at times, they strike out a bunch, and they're not the most solid team, trustworthy team in the field. And they've struggled on the road at times. They got swept at South Carolina. There's been some other road games that they've struggled in as well. I just think when you combine all those factors, I think it sets up well for a gritty Tennessee team that plays really well at home, truly defends its home stadium. So if it were in Gainesville, honestly, I would pick Florida to win the series. But because it's in Knoxville, Florida struggled on the road. Again, they're not all that solid in the field, and they strike out a good bit. That's not winning baseball, because the difference between Tennessee and Florida right now is, although Tennessee, doesn't have the highest averages on the team, instead of striking out a ton, they're walking a ton. And that's the difference in close games. And Tennessee has been good defensively for the most part. So I think that will be the difference in this series. So I do think Tennessee wins this weekend. In terms of the next 2 weekends combined, obviously the goal is to go above 500. 4-2 would be, go ahead and build Tony Vitello a statue right now, right? But the Vanderbilt pitching staff, and I know Kumar Rocker got touched up tonight, gave up 3 home runs, 6 earned runs. But I would be surprised if Kumar Rocker pitches like that again. He's going to be a top 2 pick, maybe the number 1 overall pick, for a reason. And then you have Jack Leiter, who's probably better right now than Kumar Rocker the game after him. So it's just going to be so difficult to win with those two guys on the mound. So obviously the goal should be 4-2 or better. I think the reasonable expectation is 3-3. I think Tennessee is good enough to where the expectation, even outside of the facility, should be 3-3. So I think Tennessee wins this weekend. I think they maybe struggle a little bit more next weekend just because of who is on the pitching mound. But as Georgia is proving tonight, anything is possible. So we'll see what takes place. But Ryan, thanks for joining me. I'm looking forward to picking back up my Diamond Vols podcast, and you're going to hop on with me for 20 to 30 minutes after every weekend series and kind of give our initial thoughts on the weekend, and then we'll do a preview podcast like we're doing now for the rest of the season. So excited to be talking baseball with you as we get into the real meat of the SEC baseball schedule and look towards a tournament. You're doing a great job covering the baseball team for VolQuest, and look forward to tag teaming some coverage of the Diamond Vols with you. Where can people follow you and your work to keep up with your coverage of the baseball team?
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at rshump00. That's rshump00. And at VolQuest.com, like you said, we'll have weekly previews, and then on Monday the 3-2-1, kind of recapping the weekend and then taking a look forward. So it's going to be – I'm excited for a big weekend of baseball at Lindsey Nelson Stadium, and then excited to get back with you on Sunday and talk about all of it.
Absolutely. Be sure to follow Ryan on Twitter. You can follow me at BenMcKee14. Be sure to stay locked into VolQuest posts coming out, articles coming out on the baseball team, and be locked into the message boards as we chatted up with the good old people in the general's quarters to break down what we see this weekend. So that'll do it for Ryan and myself. Next up is Nick De La Torre of Gators Territory, Florida's Rivals site. He joined the podcast to discuss this weekend's game from the Florida perspective. So without further ado, here's Nick.
We're joined now on the Diamond Vols podcast by Florida Gator beat writer Nick De La Torre. You can follow Nick at De La Torre on Twitter at D-E-L-A-T-O-O, or excuse me, 1-0 and 2 R's and an E. Be sure to follow Nick on there. He covers Florida for Rivals and Gators Territory. Nick, how are you, buddy?
Good. I've been on podcasts before, and I've been on my buddy Trey Wallace's show. And when we're talking football, I don't like giving out my Twitter handle because the Florida Tennessee rivalry. I'm like, don't tell them where I am. They don't need to come and follow me and yell at me. Just don't worry about it. But I think it's a little less hatred for baseball maybe than football.
Well, and right now the hatred. If that's the word we're going to go with from Tennessee fans, it's not geared at anybody other than Tennessee itself. Tennessee fans are just upset with Tennessee right now. So even if Florida comes out and sweeps Tennessee this weekend, their anger will not be taken out on you, I can assure you.
Okay, good.
But, Nick, I appreciate you joining us to talk about Tennessee, Florida this weekend. I don't know that I ever thought that we would – be walking into a baseball series between Tennessee and Florida where Tennessee was the higher ranked team, especially with Tennessee being in the top five, depending on which poll you look at. But Florida entered the season number one in the country. They haven't necessarily lived up to that hype just yet. They played great baseball this past weekend at Ole Miss, but I did feel like Florida was properly ranked preseason number one just based off of kind of the draft luck that they had last summer and all the talent that they were returning. Just from your perspective, kind of why was Florida ranked number one in preseason, and then kind of why haven't they lived up to that number one ranking just yet?
Yeah, well, I think when you talk about preseason rankings, you only have a couple things to go off of. And then you had even less to go off of because of the COVID shortened year. So what you have to go off of is Florida was 16-1, started 16-0. And then if you look at the team, you lost one starter in Austin Langworthy and a backup player in Brady Smith. And other than that, everyone's back, including your entire weekend rotation. And really, so you're looking at Florida. Hey, look how they started. The exact same team is back. And now you're adding guys like Timmy Manning and Jordan Kerryon in a really good recruiting class. I don't know where you would have put Florida other than one. You know, they were number one when the season ended, and you know, for all the reasons I just said. So, yeah, for me, it made a lot of sense that Florida was going to be a consensus number one. And then to get to where we are now, you really got to look at Tommy Mace and Jack Leftwich, who are the Friday, Saturday night guys, have not lived up to more Jack Leftwich, but both guys coming into last weekend against Ole Miss were taken out of the starting rotation. And Kevin O'Sullivan was trying to say it's not a big deal. If a baseball coach moves his Friday night guy out of his starting job, that's a big deal at no matter what point of the season. And this is Tommy's third year as the Friday night starter. So it was a big deal. He really has pitched okay, probably not exceeding his expectations, maybe right around them. But then Jack Leftwich has really struggled this year in the Saturday role. And then when you look at Florida, they're a team that strikes out a lot. They just had their first game without a strikeout against FAMU on Wednesday of the season. And we're almost 30 games into a season. It's your first time you didn't strike out. Judd Fabian, who's considered a top five pick, is second in the country in strikeouts. He's only hitting 237 right now. Florida as a whole has hit really well, but when you start looking at those guys, the key guys, Tommy Mace, Jack Leftwich, Judd Fabian, they're not living up to what we expected them to be from a statistical standpoint. And I think that's kind of where Florida's struggled at times this year. The guys who expected to lead you have not had the success in the numbers, the stats that you thought they would.
Yeah, and Florida's still a really good baseball team. That's not my intentions of asking that question. Still 20-9 and have as much talent as anybody in the country, can still go out and win the SEC, win a national championship. And you look at their schedule and, you know, they open with Miami, which was a big-time series right out of the gates. Great for college baseball. And Florida loses that series 2-1, but game two, Florida loses 10-9. In 13 innings, and then the series finale, Florida loses 6-8. So that series could have kind of gone either way, just a couple of plays here or there.
And that all started Friday, so Tommy doesn't last as long as they want. And then you get, you know, Florida's winning big on Friday night, but Miami storms back and scores a bunch of runs that don't really matter if you're thinking at the time. You know, Florida's up 8, and Miami scores 6. And you're like, all right, well, whatever. It gets a little close at the end. But Miami carried the momentum into Saturday, and then you get a not a good start from Jack, which I've already talked about. And then Miami just built momentum from the seventh inning on Friday into, by the time Miami won that game Saturday, you're sitting there thinking Sunday, Florida's got no chance. Miami's got all the momentum. And I'm sure no one wants to lose to a rival, but it's an out-of-conference game, and it's the first weekend of the year. And then you also don't know, well, is Miami good? You know, you just don't know so many things that, you know, that first weekend.
Right. And my point in bringing up that Miami series is it's really only one of two series that hasn't gone Florida's way. And it wasn't necessarily because Florida played bad baseball that weekend, just had a couple unfortunate breaks as you just illustrated. Now the weekend sweep of South Carolina, when South Carolina swept them, that may have been a little bit different story. But you look at South Carolina, that series of Florida getting swept, and you look at Miami winning that series, and that's really the only, I guess, bad baseball in terms of looking at the result on the schedule. That's really the only bad baseball Florida has played all season. And you go on the road, or excuse me, you welcome Ole Miss two games for last week, and you win 2 of 3 against a really good Ole Miss team. It feels like Florida has been forgotten because of what happened at South Carolina, because of that opening weekend of baseball. Would you agree with that Florida has kind of been forgotten about now? And what has been the difference, I guess, in the Ole Miss series against Texas A&M to open up SEC play? What was kind of the difference in those weekends compared to the Miami weekend and the South Carolina weekend?
Yeah, when I look at the Miami weekend, I think it was just you lost momentum and you were still figuring out things in the bullpen. Texas A&M coming in, I thought, okay, Texas A&M is going to hit the ball. They've got good pitching. Florida, to that point, was leading the SEC in batting average and slugging. So I'm like, okay, well, this will be Florida's first test. And they hit the tar out of the ball, tore the cover off the ball against A&M. And I think for me, it was going up to South Carolina. Florida had only had 2 road games in the entire season. And you never really know how your team is going to react. And Florida's got a bunch of guys who are freshmen and sophomores who, because you didn't have SEC play last year, this is going to be their second SEC series ever, their first on the road. And I think there's probably something to Florida had a lot of nice things said about them in the offseason, and everyone was talking about how good they were. I think the team kind of ate into that a little bit, and you start feeling too good about yourself. Baseball's a really humbling game, and it'll bring you down to earth real quick. So if you look at the South Carolina series, we probably should have known it. I've already mentioned that Florida strikes out a lot. South Carolina's pitching staff at the time led the nation in strikeouts per 9. And Florida struck out a lot. So when you look at Florida's team, if they strike out, the game they lost to Ole Miss, they struck out 18 times in the game. If you do the quick math, That means you're only giving yourself 9 outs to try to match what the other team is doing, and that's not a recipe to win. So Florida needs to get good starting pitching. They've had a couple of injuries, two UCL injuries that caused Tommy John. So the bullpen's a little bit depleted. It's not what we thought it was going to be. There's really a premium on getting 5 to 6 innings out of your starter so you don't have to tax the bullpen early. And then Florida's just got to stop striking out because you're just not giving yourself enough outs to score in games. And that's what happened at South Carolina. And they were better against Ole Miss in their 2 wins. Only 5 strikeouts on Friday and 5 on Sunday. Obviously, the 18 strikeouts on Saturday in the loss. So Florida's got to put the ball in play. And I think there's been too much watching good pitches and not getting into good hitters counts, and which have, you know, kind of led to the strikeouts. And then you've got a couple guys in the bullpen that I think are finally starting to solidify roles now.
You mentioned some of the weaknesses, whether that be the pitchers maybe not pitching to their potential, some hitters obviously striking out and not living up to their potential as well. What are the strengths of this Florida baseball team?
They can hit. They can really hit. And if you go up and down the lineup, it really starts with Jacob Young in the one hole. He broke a Florida record with 30 hits, a 30-game hit streak, which was fun because it dated back to the 2019 Lubbock Regional where he got a hit in the last 2 games there, and then he had a hit in all 17 games in 2019. His 30-game hit streak was like 650 days old. So that made it interesting. Jacob Young's the table setter. And then they've shuffled the lineup around. I mentioned Judd Fabian has been struggling. He dropped from the 2 hole down to 5 or 6, depending on the game. So in the second spot now is Nathan Hickey. He's hitting .369 on the year. He's got some pop. He's had 6 home runs. But right there, you've got 80 hits from number one and number two. In your lineup. So those are the table setters. And then you've got a couple of young guys who have stepped in and become everyday starters in third baseman, second baseman, Colby Halter and Sterling Thompson. Both of them are hitting, I think Thompson's just under 300, but Halter's over 300. So you've got a bunch of guys that can hit. The interesting thing is that Florida's fielding has not been good. And this is a team, I've covered Florida 2 different years where they've won the highest best fielding team, the highest fielding percentage in the country. And that's just not the case this year. There's a bunch of errors. And if you watch enough college baseball, you know that the home scorers are nice when it comes to the home team, when it comes to fielding errors. So I'm looking at Florida's errors on the year and I'm like, I've seen more than what we have here. And that's just a thing for me with it. That's what probably has been so strange for Florida is Kevin O'Sullivan baseball teams pitching and fielding. Maybe you're not going to be a great hitting team. You might not have a great average. You figure it out. If you've got a great fielding and great pitching, you might only need to score 3 runs a game to win. And this year, you know, the pitching specifically the bullpen, and then the fielding with the errors. I mean, your starting shortstop had 9 errors through 20 games before they made a move there. That's just been interesting to watch how this team is not really lived up to, you know, what is the cornerstone of Kevin O'Sullivan building a program in pitching and fielding.
Now we talked about, you know, the game one, game two starter, however you want to view Tommy Mace and Jack Leftwich. And it's pretty remarkable that we're talking about them as maybe not completely living up to their potential. And Tommy Mace is 4-0 on the year and has a 2.54 ERA. And Jack Leftwich is 4-2 with a 3.40 ERA, pretty remarkable, and just speaks to their potential and their ability. What does that third spot, that maybe Sunday spot in the rotation look like? And you just touched on the bullpen a little bit, but how would you assess the bullpen as well?
Yeah, so Florida's in a great spot. Hunter Barco is a, you know, 6'4" lefty that's going to throw 95, and he's got a nasty slider, a nasty changeup. It's Florida's in a really, really interesting position because a lot of times, you know, even when you get into SEC play, you try to win game one and that's your best guy. And then you put your second best guy game two and you'll use your best pitchers from the bullpen to try to win the series and you'll get a lot of TBDs, and you know, you don't know who's going to pitch on Sunday. Hunter Barco is he'll be a first round pick next year. So it's a nice luxury for Florida to have when it comes to a Sunday guy. He's really good. And it's interesting to see what they'll do Saturday, because they moved Mace and Leftwich out and Tommy responded. They put Franco Alleman, who's been a bullpen guy. He started the game and he threw four, and Tommy Mace comes in and he throws five. And it's almost like a starter situation if you look at like the Tampa Bay Rays or some of these MLB teams. And it worked out perfectly for Florida. And you couldn't have drawn it up better for Sully. You try to do it the next day on Saturday. Christian Scott looks great. He throws five innings and you're thinking you only need four from Jack Leftwich now. He comes in and gives up six runs, hits six batters, and Florida loses that game on Saturday. So you're looking at it and you're thinking, well, that's not exactly how we drew it up Friday and how it worked out Friday. So I think Mace will get the start Friday. I know that he will get the start Friday, but I would expect Christian Scott to get the start Saturday, because he didn't get the same response from Jack as you got from Tommy. But the bullpen is interesting when you start mixing it up like that. So Franco Alleman is a guy from a JUCO, and he's 6'6", throws 98 miles an hour. He's got end of the game stuff. Florida wanted him to be their closer, and he did not respond well to that early in the year. So that's why they've tried to bring him into less leverage situations. I think he'll be the guy that backs up Tommy on Friday. And then you're still going to go Saturday, Christian, and then Jack. But the bullpen has gotten a little bit shorter. They lost Nick Pogue, who was probably the fourth or fifth best pitcher on the team. He had Tommy John surgery the week of the opening game, the Miami series. And then another one, Tyler Nesbitt, a guy who was scoreless over 10 and a third last year as a freshman. You lost him. And now you're kind of trying to find answers. And they have a freshman left-hander and Timmy Manning. Another guy that gets a lot of innings is Brandon Sproat. And then a graduate transfer. How many times do you get a sixth-year senior in college baseball? And Trey Vanderweed, another left-hander. So college baseball, you kind of get – a lot of guys get innings and a lot of guys get at-bats in that first month. And right now Florida's probably got four or five guys that they'll go to out of the bullpen in SEC play when games matter. And it'll be Vanderweed, Sproat, Leftwich, and Alleman, maybe Timmy Manning. But that's it. And that's why I keep saying, you know, it's kind of a short bullpen, because those are the guys that have earned the coaching staff's trust to this point of the year.
I'll get you out of here on this. Just kind of want to put a bow on, I guess, our scout of Florida from a Tennessee fan's perspective, so that Tennessee fans know what to expect when Florida and Tennessee get underway tomorrow night. Just your thoughts on this weekend and kind of what you think will take place. And again, you've kind of already talked about what I imagine you'll mention as the keys to Florida picking up a series win. And if Florida loses, what the reasons will be if they do lose. So just kind of your thoughts on this series this weekend and what you think will take place.
Yeah, I think playing on the road is tough, and Tennessee's been fantastic this year. I think the job that they've done is tremendous to build the program to where it is now, 7-2 in the SEC, 24-5. I'm interested to see Blake Tidwell. I want to see Liam Spence in the infield and Sean Hundley pitching for the Vols. And I think if you look at it, I'd probably say Florida should win two of three, but I wouldn't be surprised if Tennessee wins the series. I don't think either team will sweep. And to me, it's really tough. Florida did not look good on the road. And I asked the guys, you know, what did you learn from that road experience to take into this weekend? Because if Florida wants to win the SEC, that magic number is 20 wins. And right now you're sitting with five and five in the SEC. You need to find 15 more wins in these next series. And you know, they can't afford to go in even in road series and go 1-2. So Florida really needs a series win. So I'll probably predict Florida to win 2 out of 1, but I would not be surprised if Tennessee wins this series at home. They've been very good at home this year.
Absolutely. I have very similar thoughts on the weekend and am looking forward to a competitive baseball series. Hopefully the weather, the bad weather will stay away. But Nick, I appreciate you so much for hopping on the pod for 15 or so minutes and giving us a breakdown of Florida and sharing your thoughts on the Tennessee Florida series this weekend. I know you don't like giving your Twitter name away. So is it how can people follow you and your work to keep up with the Florida perspective of this weekend series?
Well, it's already out there. I do a lot. I tweet a lot during baseball games. And then we also do a lot of coverage. We have a story coming out about three players to watch for Tennessee today on our site at Gators Territory. And then we have, I'll have my play-by-play and all that coverage throughout the weekend and throughout the rest of the year.
Awesome. Well, Nick, thanks again so much for your time. That is Nick De La Tour. He is the Florida Gators beat writer for Rivals site Gators Territory. Nick, thanks so much for your time, buddy.
Thanks, man.